frills. Or no frills. Save on parking lot.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm Alex. I just had several questions. Just some of the stuff I hear, I was actually curious what exactly is going on. It's like I had a list of things.
Okay.
I thought this was a hoax or crank when I first read it. StatsCan wanting to do take all your banking info. Like, I thought this was a hoax when I first read it.
No. So Stats Canada, and it had not been for Global News, it might have been quietly done, had asked the government, they wanted to take, to start with, 500,000 Canadians, individual transactions, private transactions. And the government is still supporting this, the Liberal government. We are fighting it like crazy. It's completely wrong and people are outraged.
So this isn't a hoax, it's actually trying to be implemented?
Yes, it's not a hoax.
Whether I go to Subway or, I don't know, Starbucks, why would that matter?
I agree.
How do you form public policy based on, that's my personal choices.
Yeah, I believe that sometimes for the purposes of public safety, security, not banking data, but there's times where government might need to violate someone's privacy with terms and conditions if they think terrorist attacks are happening. But for, to know how many times I go to Costco, to know, that I went and had lunch. I don't care if they say they're anonymized.
If someone's doing something wrong, okay, get a warrant. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, but I'm actually outraged. I think enough Canadians are outraged that all of a sudden, because the Liberals kept saying, you guys just don't believe in science. And we're like, are you kidding me? You didn't care about the mandatory long-form census, and we said, well...
But you watch that video that Global posted. They're doing this as an alternative to the long-form, so canceling in 2010 would actually have been irrelevant.
No, they're not. The long-form census is still going to happen. Yeah. This is... Anyway, the banks are going to take it to court, probably.
Okay.
Both the NDP and the Conservatives are... And Canadians are... speaking up, but it's not a hoax.
Okay, I thought that was originally. There's something else I heard, a similar follow-up, something about 15 years worth of credit card data. Any truth to that?
So they went and they did take, how there's two companies,
TransUnion and Equifax,
they did get a bunch of credit card data from TransUnion, not Equifax, TransUnion. The Privacy Commissioner is looking into all of this.
So they went around the guy to do it?
The Privacy Commissioner had no idea what the StatsCan has really broad powers, but the Privacy Commissioner is looking into all this stuff. You have a right to be concerned.
Okay, this whole carbon tax thing, I'm not sure how reliable my info is. Something about going up to $50 a ton in the next few years.
The government's not willing to say that, but every single person that says if you're gonna put a carbon tax in for it to work, it has to go up to, so they're gonna move it up towards $50 a ton. Yes.
Carbon dioxide's plant food though. Like any grade 9 textbook will tell you that, like science book. It's used in photosynthesis. Like I can't think of, even if it was harmful, I don't see how actually taxing it. Okay, you say it's harmful, okay, for the sake of argument. How does taxing it actually prevent that? I don't see cause and effect.
I mean,
here.
I think there's sort of, and so again, our party says we do need to do things to reduce carbon emissions, but we are not going to put a carbon tax in. So that's the position our party takes. The Liberals say if we charge you, I don't know, right now it's $1.35 for a liter of gasoline. They say if it's $3, then people are not going to drive as much. And so therefore they're changing behavior.
Okay, that is technically true, yes.
I mean, and it's fine if you live in Vancouver and you can hop on a Canada line.
Yeah,
but if you
it's technically true, but I'm not sure it's the right approach. In smaller towns, you'll kill them. And I lived in Dawson Creek for a while. It's, you hop across Alberta and Grand Prairie. Gas is like 20 cents a liter cheaper.
Yeah. Well, we have a carbon tax here.
They implemented it starting about a year and a half ago. That it just that
or
it
went higher. Way back, Gordon Campbell put it in.
Yeah.
But it's been going up every year.
But since Alberta did theirs, the 20 cent differential is pretty much non-existent anymore. Is there some legal way to stall this? Or I hear the premiers are doing their own stuff.
So, again, the premiers and our leader, first of all, the premiers are taking Canada to court to say you're interfering in our jurisdiction. What's going to change things is what happens in the next election. So either, you know, the Trudeau has said he's, that this is the right thing to do to deal with climate change, and he's going to let Canadians decide in 2019. So unless the courts say different, it's going to be when people go to the polls.
I know Ontario and Saskatchewan are posting their own challenges.
Yeah. And New Brunswick just said they joined in.
Okay, I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah.
And I know Notley's leaving next year, but her successor will probably fight it as well.
Jason Kenney, if he wins, yes.
Okay. Yeah, there's another thing that came up, that whole, and it sounds like another gun registry, that C71.
Yep.
Is it a gun registry in all but the name?
In my opinion.
Okay. Let me guess, necessary for public safety?
And they're also looking at a handgun ban. So we're actually in 100 Mile House. I've got one of my colleagues. We're going to do a community meeting about C71 in 100 Mile on Saturday. But C71 is really a backdoor gun registry. The problem is the gangs in Toronto that get handguns mostly get them from the U.S. smuggled.
Yeah.
They don't buy them legally.
If you're going to shoot someone, does it really matter if the gun's legal or not?
Well, I think, we do need some controls, but having...
Being a bit sarcastic.
Yeah. Having a backdoor registry, we already got rid of it, and they want to have a handgun ban, which, again, we have people that are, sports shooters.
Because I'd heard, again, this might be basket case people talking, but doing a backdoor registry would allow for easier confiscation should the time come. They're naturally suspicious people.
C71 is a backdoor registry.
Okay.
Whether it goes any further than that, there was concerns in High River with the floods, if you remember.
Yeah, I heard something about the RCMP went in and just seized everything. Which I'm pretty sure that's break and enter and theft. Can that be challenged, the C-71, or is that?
The Senate, I think it's in the Senate, and again, a, whether it's gonna happen or not, it's well on its way. I mean, we have a majority government, and we have mostly Senate appointees that are liberal-minded, and so it becomes tough to stop things unless people are really mad. So if you look at those, there were some changes to the small business taxes over a year ago, and the small businesses were really mad, and the government backtracked. I wouldn't be, you know, they backtracked on McClintock's killer. They said she's
yeah, and
fine, but people were really mad, so they backtracked.
Yeah.
So I know, I think, you know, when people are really, I wouldn't be surprised if they backtrack on the Stats
yeah.
Canada issue, because I think they're already starting to say, oh,
yeah.
well, it's a pilot. Oh, well, you know, the privacy
yeah.
commissioner. So I think they know that they've overstepped.
Yeah, but the Canadian, that Bankers Association, their guy is saying, no, we're shocked. We thought this was just a general inquiry. And there's some partial video posted on YouTube. Privacy commissioner is saying, no, I'm not really a legal expert. I just give general information. So he said it was misleading to claim that I signed off on this.
They didn't. They didn't sign off. She had no idea the scope of what they were trying
yeah.
to do. Yeah.
Well, I guess for that StatsCan thing, you can do statistical research with a sample size of 1 to 2,000 people. Why do you need 500K?
And 500K was the start. They were going to get a different 500K every 6 months. So after a couple of years, they would have
millions. Like even 10,000, you can do a very clear
yeah.
research.
Yep.
Again, I'm just assuming everything else for the sake of argument.
Yep. So you know what? You're not wrong
yeah.
about all these issues.
And you mentioned McClintock. I have to be honest, this whole thing, it's not even so much that she got released. This whole, based on that Gladue rulings and IP leak, that based on race, a certain group will get lesser sentences. And it's in 718.2 of the criminal code. For Aboriginal offenders, all alternatives to prison must be considered.
She wasn't an Aboriginal offender.
She identified as one. I got to be frank, and this is in the criminal code, I looked it up. A race-based discount, like giving any group, regardless of the group, preferential treatment or lesser sentences strictly based on skin color or identified skin color. How is that not racism? I mean, I would have thought that equality is everyone gets treated the same. Like, and the Supreme Court signed off on this nonsense, so it's, is that not racism?
I think with this one, because the vast majority of way outruling the population size is Indigenous in the jails. My argument is we need to fix things way before they get to the jails.
But is it overrepresented because of some discrimination, or is it overrepresented
because
of crime rates? Because
you know, the perpetrators are.
So logically, if you're smart, could you not game the system simply by identifying and then getting out quick? It seems easy to abuse.
See, this one, I mean, your first number, I share your concerns.
Yeah.
We need to have, obviously, whatever we're doing is not working. So we need to have something that's going to work better. In my opinion, what we need to do is, I mean, people are heading down that path because for a whole lot of reasons, but once you get to the stage where you're committing a crime, I think you're committing a crime.
Yeah.
And the sentencing should be based.
Well, the argument is that, et cetera, that the conditions in the reserves are so bad that it's basically third world conditions. Okay, I'll entertain that argument. How does giving people a lesser sentence based on skin color address any of those conditions? It's kind of the opposite of cause and effect.
Mm.
you don't eliminate the cause by removing the effect. Like, if you're gonna have different sentencing rules, then those underlying conditions will still not be addressed. It's basically sugarcoating. Like, I can't believe this is even legal.
Well, as you say, the Supreme Court.
I mean, on to be, and it's the principle of it, really. Like, if anything called for the notwithstanding clause to overturn, it'd be this. Because I think everyone should be treated the same, regardless of, you know, whatever race, religion, gender, so on. But I don't hear anyone ever, I didn't hear anyone address that. Like, there's the outrage that she's getting out of prison, but nothing to do with the underlying reason as to how she was able to.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that she actually even did identify as Indigenous, because that facility does take non-Indigenous. So I don't know the details in terms of, is that why she ended up there? I don't know if that's why she ended up there, but it was clearly, again, wrong.
Yes.
The government who initially defended it pretty soon recognized, and as you saw last week, in spite of calling us ambulance chasers and all sorts of things.
That made the news.
Yeah, I mean, they're calling Lisa Ray because she's saying this is wrong. But
if you're concerned about rehabilitation, fine, send her to one 3 months before she's ready to get out.
The healing lodges are meant to be places for people who are almost ready to go back into communities and to sort of be part of that adaptation back into.
She's got like 15 years to go, so it's not exactly near.
Yep.
I guess next is actually something that what's his name, Bernie brought up. Is this actually true? The whole thing having to do with like milk and chicken, that supply and prices are fixed.
There is supply management for our dairy and others, and this is where different countries support the agricultural industry in different ways. So, we for our dairy, we have supply management. For our cattlemen, we have lots of different programs that support them. And every country seems to have a different ways that they support their agricultural industry. So when the states say they go after us for supply management, you know, fair enough, but then you need to stop your supporting.
As McClayman, and this is something that Trump said as well, that results in prices being doubled or tripled. And they keep, because of the,
it's higher. I don't know if it's double or triple, but there are the cost of eggs and cheese and poultry are higher. Whereas, you know, in terms of how we support cattlemen, for example, it's not supply management, but I mean, that's obviously coming out of your tax dollars, so it's not quite as direct in terms of how you see the impact.
But I can't understand how any conservative would support that, though, because that, it seems anti-free market. It seems a little confusing to me. But I thought that like everyone just trades freely and government stays out of it. That's how I understood it to be.
I mean, I think, again, you need to, you know, every country supports their agricultural industry. It's not totally free market anywhere. It's in spite of the supply management, because it's so visible, is much more direct. You can see what's happening with supply management, whereas, you know, with, we'll say, wheat, with cattle, with, it's not as direct. So it's just less visible. But our agricultural industries, you know, conservatives support free market, but it's, you know, there are times when it's not like 100%. And you know, Maxime, there's a lot of subsidies that he, when he was industry minister, provided to a lot of different companies in spite of, and he was the industry minister, so.
I see. And actually, I have family in Toronto, so I'm kind of wondering about this. Toronto being used as basically a open-ended refugee center from people coming from Minnesota and New York.
There's people coming in. They are abusing Canada's generosity in our system. Don't tell me that someone from New York. We have something called the Safe Country Agreement, whereby people have to claim refugees.
Asylum in the first country, yeah.
They're abusing it by crossing at a non-legal border crossing. And I think there was about 15,000 last year. I have to check the actual.
Because I've heard something upwards of 30 to 40,000 at this point.
Total. They are then getting moved into Toronto. They are being put up in hotels. So the Conservatives have said that we need to close the safe country loophole. You've got a Liberal majority. So,
yeah.
No matter what Maxime says or what the Conservatives say, they will head down the path that they're going to head until either people are so mad at them that they backtrack or there's another election. My concern with Maxime is he's just going to give Justin Trudeau another shot at winning, and he says that's just fine. Well, if you think that's fine, then that's a problem.
Okay. So even if you close the border, what about the 40,000 or so who are already here?
So they...
Are they going to be deported?
They will have their hearing. So the 40,000 that are already here, we used to have a rapid response process. So Jason Kenney brought in a process whereby if you come in from a safe country, there was a whole lot less steps in terms of the hearing that you had for to be a refugee. So it was basically, boom, hearing back. The Liberals got rid of that bill. That was early on. And they sort of reinstated this multi-step refugee process. So they basically backtracked in terms of what we did. So what we planned to do, Michelle Rempel, is we would close the safe country loophole so that if you cross, you get sent right back because it is a safe country, but to New York. Second, we would need to restart that legislation that was changed, whereby if you come in from a safe country, like if people come in, from California and claim refugee status, it used to be they had the rights to this whole step, and we just said no. You have a hearing. You quickly determine if you're so.
If you're coming into the U.S. on a tourist visa, and then coming if you're New York or Minnesota, and those are the two big points. That seems completely fraudulent.
It is.
And my honest response is: screw the hearings. Just deport them.
If you close the safe country loophole, yes,
yeah.
You could do that. You could do that if. The safe country loophole, because what they're doing is they are coming in and claiming refugee status here. They have to do it there in the U.S. If they come through a legitimate border crossing and claim refugee status, then by law you have to give them the process. So we had an expedited process.
And what percentage of claims like ballpark are accepted versus rejected?
I'd have to check. But we sort of say there's people who are true refugees that need support from Canadians, not people crossing the border and jumping in the queue.
But hypothetically, if you won, would you just, everyone who snuck across, would you just deport them en masse?
If they came through, if we closed the loophole?
I mean, everyone already here.
Everyone already here would have to have, you couldn't do it. The courts wouldn't let you do it. That you'd have to, you could give them a facilitated, the quicker process, but you couldn't give them the process, the ones that are here. Your courts would shut you down.
Even if it were expedited, even if you're...
You'd have to have at least the expedited process for the people that are here. Because they're in the country the courts, you'd never, you'd be shut down.
Could you use notwithstanding clause to do this too? What is it, section 33 of the charter?
If you had, it would have to be legislation. You'd have to have legislation. That's a good question. There might be a possibility.
Okay, hypothetically, even if you make the whole border a entry point, that doesn't deal with...
No, that's what the... if they come... If you make the whole border an entry point, then they can't claim asylum status
right
here. They have to go back.
So
then you can just send them back. The people that are here, and I'm not a lawyer, but the people that are here have claimed asylum. It's under the rules of the day when they entered, and I think they would have to have at least an expedited process, the people that are here.
Even if it completely violates third country agreement, or third safe country agreement?
Well, the ones that are in don't, so you can't go retroactive, typically. So the whole border becomes port of entry. Anyone that comes across goes right back. Those that are here under the legislation and the safe country agreement that was in place, I'm not sure that you could... I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah. So if these hearings would ever take a few years, what exactly do you do in the meantime with them?
So number one, you can have legislation to expedite,
yeah,
which we have, and that is something that should be done to expedite the hearings for the people that are here.
Because it just seems so completely wrong to, for anyone who would come legal and go through all those hoops, to just say, oh, screw it, I'm walking across. It rewards the wrong stuff, so it's... wow. And there's this other thing which, again, I thought was a hoax when I first read about it. The UN Global Migration Compact, expected to be signed on December 10th. Is this a reality, or...?
It is. It's not legally binding. It's not like a UN convention, or it's not legally binding, but it is real, and it is something that the current government, from my understanding, is intending to sign.
And I know Rempel has a bunch of videos online. She did about a 20-minute piece on this, and I'll be completely frank. It looks like she talks in circles to avoid giving an answer as to whether or not conservatives support this. Like, that's the most honest answer I can give. She goes on for, like, a huge video.
I haven't seen the video, so...
But she doesn't clearly say, like, you cannot get an answer.
I mean,
you guys support
Canada her. Will never give up our sovereignty to any United Nations pact.
Because that's... Reading the text, it seems to be exactly what it is. And section 17 of it, this actually sounds like a little propaganda, like, we should blah, 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 and use this wording, this language, and... This sounds like promoting propaganda.
I know that, or at least I understand. So the Immigration Committee of Canada's Parliament is doing a whole look at this particular pact, and I'm not sure if they've started or they're doing it right now, and they're bringing in... So I'm not sure where that's going to end up. Sometimes you end up, like, my focus is on my files. So I'm not sure what the committee's doing currently.
So I've tried to get a hold of Rempel several times. I can't get my messages returned. Mm-hmm. And the notion that this is a go-ahead and she's not screaming bloody murder about it, it's okay to actually oppose it. Like, that's... Like, the idea of giving up...
I mean, we're never going to give up our sovereignty. I mean, I think in the current NAFTA agreement, we've given up sovereignty that we never should have given up. If you look at the NAFTA agreement that they've just concluded, there's some huge concerns around sovereignty within that particular piece of legislation. We have to protect our sovereignty.
Yeah, but like, I don't hear any real objections from you guys, like, it's, I know Bernier put that petition out in 1905, I think. Have you guys put out anything similar?
I'd have to check again on that.
Okay, so does your party oppose it, like the migration compact?
So I think we're gonna do this study, because I think you get in expert witnesses, and then, like, you know, it's fine for Maxine to sort of just jump up and, oh, I oppose this, and to be a populist. But I think you need to look at it, you need to hear from the experts, and then you say, this is a huge concern, we're not going to support it, or we look at it. So I don't know the answer to that yet. I think they are looking at it in terms of having expert witnesses come to committee and say, what is this going to mean?
So who would these expert witnesses be?
Whether it be a... I'm not looking, go to the committee notes.
Yeah.
As I say, I'm focused on a whole bunch of pieces of legislation
yeah.
that I have to deal with right
but
now.
But I've
so.
Tried to, your immigration critic won't return my messages, so you're, to be frank,
yeah.
you're the next best option. And it's, the fact that I don't hear any word from you guys, that kind of, it makes me wonder. Like, it really does.
I think she's clearly said Canada will never support anything that gives up our sovereignty if this is not binding in law. Like the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, we, when it came to the House, we said, listen, it's a good aspirational document, but it's not something we're gonna turn into Canadian law. It's a declaration, it's not a convention, and it's not a, so we can say this is, whereas the current government wants to turn that into Canadian law. So this global thing is not legally binding. It's not something where we would ever look at giving up our sovereignty on. So let's look at what they're saying in it.
Trump has said no. Austria said no. Hungary said no. Italy, Poland, Czech Republic, Croatia.
And Canada right now is saying yes through the Trudeau government.
But. And there's also, I've also looked on the UN websites and it has to do with that so-called caravan coming through the South Americas. They're in Mexico now, they're trying to demand entry. Their spokespeople say, and I'm quoting them, it's that all migrants must be respected and have their wishes, like, to paraphrase it, it's regardless of their status, their claims have to be heard out. And these are people not even in the U.S., but want demanding access to and demanding hearings heard. And you go through, and the way I read the U.N. stuff, it looks like they don't actually respect national sovereignty. So why would we even consider any kind of compact, even if it's non-binding, why would we even consider anything with the U.N.?
There's lots of things I disagree with the U.N., and I think there's huge issues with the U.N., I mean, you look at some of their human rights, you know, their Security Council, their women's rights, their human rights.
Their human rights committee is made up of people who don't believe in human rights, the same with their Women's Equality Council.
So the UN has huge problems, there's no question. I think Michelle is doing her due diligence on this. She's not going to... In the same sense of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, we said we can accept this as an aspirational document. We do not support this in Canadian law. So it's something that was Canada's position on that, the UN Declaration. The Liberals have said we are going to take this document that was never meant to be transposed into Canadian law and transpose it into Canadian law, which is going to create huge, huge issues. So I think, you know, there's one thing to have some compassion for true refugees, and I think we need to have compassion for true refugees with some principles around sovereignty, decision-making, And I, as I say, I'm waiting for Michelle to, they're gonna do their process and, I mean, the government is gonna go ahead and do whatever they do, but Canada will be, in the next election, I think there'll be clarity around the different parties' positions.
Well, like I said, I still don't really know what your parties is, like.
Well, so that's one that,
Yeah.
you know, in the same sense that our environmental platform is not out.
Because I've been on your website, I don't actually see a platform.
We don't need to. It's not the, it's a year to the next election. So the things will get rolled out at, you know, there's some things in terms of that have been rolled
yeah.
out already, and there's other things that are gonna get rolled out closer to the election time.
So look at some of the other parties. Okay, the Liberals have their thing, it's more platitudes. Bernie has a platform, Libertarians have a platform, like a detailed one. What's it say? Nationalist Party does. I'm not sure I agree with some of their stuff, but they have a platform out. So they have stuff like listed the entire time, so it's...
So as, I mean, obviously you can't head into 2019 without a platform. But it's, you know, right now our job, we're the official opposition, is to hold the current government to account for the things that it's doing. We have the party policies. So we had our convention, we have all our party policies. We have, you know, a number of things that have been traditionally things that we've supported over time. You know, Andrew just rolled out something last week in terms of safe communities. We've rolled stuff out in terms of Trans Mountain. And, you know, when it's time for Canadians to be making a decision in 2019, then there'll be more specifics in terms of whether it's immigration, whether it's Indigenous issues, whether it's environment, whether it's gangs and crimes.
And just one more thing about that compact. Reading through some of the stuff, and some of the clauses in there look really great on paper, but you stop to think. I forget the number on it, but there's a thing that all, traditions and culture should be respected with regards to migration. And call me a redneck for saying this, but there are some cultures and traditions that absolutely do not belong in Canada. Like,
female genital mutilation.
Yeah. Honor killings.
Honor killings.
Anything really Sharia law. Stoning gays for simply being gay.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the text that I'd read in the compact, with accepting cultures as they are, does that not water down the home society by insisting in any and everything be treated the same? Because I don't think discrimination against women is a legitimate reality in many countries. I don't think just because it's a cultural practice somewhere else it should ever be accepted here simply because it's a cultural practice.
I agree.
And
that's the same, the FGM is another really
yeah.
good example. I mean, we've said a few.
But it wasn't the whole idea of multiculturalism that all cultures are just as valid as each other? Like, isn't that the whole premise?
I think that Canada's had things in its past that is unacceptable in terms of some of our cultures. So I think there are values, there's rules of law, there's that is expected. And I can remember when, Jason Kenney was doing the new immigration guide, it was talking about, you know, people that come to Canada, here are our values, here are, you know, the things that we expect you to...
Yeah, I remember something on the news a few years back, it's offensive to call honor killings barbaric, something like that. It was a big thing in like 2012 or 2013.
Well, that's what we call
yeah.
it, barbaric.
And Trudeau got offended by that.
Yeah.
So which offends you more, like the notion that it's calling it barbaric or the fact that it happens altogether? It's, I mean, I would think the practice would be far worse. Well, if this UN thing, even if a watered down version of it goes ahead, then like. What's to stop, like, the same things from, I know it's not, you say it's non-binding, but like very incompatible ideas from being pushed simply under the guise of, well, this is acceptance, this is tolerance.
Well, I think tolerance, as you talked about, is, you know, the LGB community to be, I mean, look at what some cultures do in terms of,
yeah.
I mean, that's, but there's things that are clearly illegal, they're wrong, they're unrelated to our values, and they're not okay.
But if this thing goes ahead, it's, at least from what I'm reading, from what I'm hearing, it's all of the actual values and tradition would be watered down in favor of acceptance. Like, because that whole migration compact places a huge emphasis on just acceptance, which I guess on paper sounds good, but I kind of wonder where it's heading. So I understand that Trudeau supports it. I mean, he's a globalist, but the fact that I don't hear anything from you guys or from the NDP, that's what really makes me wonder. Because you guys should be screaming your head off about that.
I think there are things to scream your head off about, which are things like what is happening, which is, you know, McClintock, which is Stats Canada taking your private data, which is, you know, the water and the people, the refugees coming across and, you know, getting put up in hotels when they're not really refugees, they're jumping queues. You know, a non-binding UN document is not something that I think we need to be screaming about right now. I mean, we need to say, what is this? And come up with a position. But to sit there, I think, you know, there'll come a time when there's going to be a position. But we've got lots of things that we need to be holding this government to account for.
Yeah. But this one's going to be passed in less than, signed, but
it's going to be signed, but it's not binding in our country. It's just another ridiculous. So I see there's other issues that, you know, if it's question period or whatever, that we need to be focused on, as opposed to a non-binding UN document that's sort of a...
Well, I've seen question period both provincially and federally, and the term gong show comes to mind. Like, it's insulting, it's rude, it's just generally just... Like, I've seen six-year-olds who act... Like, it's everyone doing it. I've seen six-year-olds who act better. Like, it's... No matter who the government of the day is, it's just being evasive. It's cheap shots at each other. Like, I don't see any actual... Again, it's regardless of who's in power, I don't see any actual meaningful discussion.
McClintock would probably still be in that healing lodge if we didn't have question periods. And you might not perceive, you know, you might look at the questions, you might look at the answers, but don't think that every single question, even though they might evade it in terms of answering.
Oh, I see lots of evasion. Like, it's...
Yeah, but the ministers and the minister staffs and the departments, they might not answer it in question period, but you can bet, like, there can be a question. I don't know, Ed Fast had one about an issue. And you can bet that the minister's coming up after saying, tell me more about this. So you might not see the effectiveness, but as they say, McClintock would still be sitting in the healing lodge if it wasn't for question period. The small business tax changes would have just gone ahead had it not been... So it might not be a satisfying process, but it's a process that does the government pays attention to.
By contrast, I've seen several Senate hearings, and they're incredibly civil. Like, it's night and day between the House and the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're incredibly dull and dry, yes, but it's incredibly civil.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I watch the House, both provincial and Ontario too, and I used to live there. It's no matter who the government of the day is, it's all the same, like catcalling and being evasive. It's, and just pot shots at each other, which almost makes you wonder what's the point. It's, and it's all parties. It's not any particular one. And you've been in office, so I'm sure you've experienced a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. And I also experience committees where it's very civil and people are trying to get things done, and debates in the House, whether it's medical assistance in dying or where it's civil and it's thoughtful. And yeah, question period is 45 minutes of... but anyway,
yes. I should just say, I guess one last thing, that M103 thing that... I think they call it, what, the blasphemy bill?
Or the Ingrid Catlett, yes. It was a motion. It was a motion, it wasn't a bill.
Yeah. So if I bring up legitimate criticisms of Islam, am I committing Islamophobia?
No.
Like, if I mentioned it quite factually, they've killed hundreds of millions of people.
They pushed gays off roofs.
Yeah.
It was a motion. It was...
the European Court of Human Rights actually upheld Austria's right to fine people for criticizing Islam, though. I don't want to see that coming here. Because there's some lady who got fined 500 euros for calling Muhammad a pedophile.
So I'm not sure if you're any better or worse after our conversation.